Sit back in your seats, get something to eat, and watch this movie. Don't let the kiddies see it, because, well, we'll let you hear the beginning first. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Left of the Projector. I am your host, Evan, back again with another film discussion from the left. You can listen to this show and subscribe at leftoftheprojector.com. And this week on the show, we are discussing a fresh new movie from 2024. I think it's still in the theater. This week, we're discussing the movie Civil War, directed by Alex Garland. It had a $50 million budget and did okay, made $90 million in the theater. It had a pretty good cast in here, too, just some of the main names. We have Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, Kaylee Spaney, Stephen McKinney, Stephen McKinley Henderson, and Nick Offerman. And with me to discuss, I have CJ, who you may remember from episode number something on Men in Black. And I also have Martin Strange, who is the host of his own podcast, Film Splaining. Thank you both for being here today.
Hello.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I was just kind of looking at, you know, Alex Garland's other films, and I know Martin and I, you and I were kind of just chatting a little bit about this, and, you know, he doesn't have a very extensive catalog as far as movies he's directed, and I wonder if, when you went into this movie, if you had, like, what were your expectations? I guess maybe that's the question I'm thinking of. Yeah. Like, what were your expectations on this movie? I feel like it had a lot of hype, a lot of commercials. You know, I don't know. I don't really remember them. I try not to watch the trailer to try going fresh, but it was all over the internet as far as promotion goes. So I'm curious what you all, before you went in, what you thought you were getting into.
Yeah, to be honest, when I saw this trailer, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to dread having to watch this. Like, I already knew, like, you make a film called Civil War in 2024 and it's about this, and I was like, oh my God, like, why has he done this? But that being said, I am a massive fan of Alex Garland's work. And if you extend back to the screenplays he wrote before he started directing, you know, there's a lot of great stuff there too. Sunshine and Dread and 28 Days Later. But I tried to go in with as few expectations as possible. I always want to be surprised by whatever I'm watching. And I always want to have a clearer mind as I can without bringing any, like, I mean, it's hard to do sometimes, you know, you want to expect certain things from certain movies, but with this one especially, I just wanted to experience it just totally.
For me, it was kind of like, I thought the title was just corny. I was thinking, okay, you're just trying to, like, feed off of everything that's happening. And I did watch the trailer a couple times. So I wasn't going in, like, non-biased. I was definitely already skeptical about the movie. I will say I have seen Alex Garland movie, is it Ex Machina?
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it? I saw it a few years ago back in college. I thought it was interesting. So I had kind of some experience with Alex Garland. But just from the trailer, I knew where they were going to, had an idea where they were going to go with it. And I was kind of like, I don't like how they're going to do that. But, and you know, I ended up seeing it. It was kind of a little different than what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, that, I like that movie, Ex Machina, Ex Machina. And then the other one, the only other saw that I've seen recently was Annihilation, which is based on a book that I actually also just am reading, like, that series right now, mm-hmm. just randomly. Maybe the Alex Garland was in the air. I saw Annihilation and then decided to watch it. But I tried to go in pretty fresh. I had, again, I feel like I had low expectations. And in a way, I actually think my expectations were exceeded only because I didn't expect a mm-hmm. lot. And I mean, I guess we could talk about the actual, you know, the film itself and, like, the, how it was made and just the cinematography, which I do think there's a lot of good aspects of it too. But one of the things I do wonder too is, I was reading about Alex Garland, and people are saying, like, oh, you know, is this movie political? And he's like, of course it's political. You know, it has a political aspect to it. And he wrote it, I think, about 4 years ago, 2020. We know what was happening around that time. So do you think that he was writing this movie, or his, not, I couldn't find anything to say this, you know, a lot of directors aren't always going to say what their all their motivations are. But did you think it was like a warning from him? Like he was trying to say, like, this is a path that this country could go down. And I'm trying to, like, not prepare you, but give you my perspective on how that could go.
Having recently listened to quite a few interviews that he's given, I think the overall point that he's trying to make is that this could happen anywhere. He said quite a few times that he could have written, he could have set this film in the UK, in his country. He could have set it somewhere in Asia, somewhere in the Middle East. He says that he chose America deliberately because, you know, the rest of the world looks to America very often. And I don't know if it's a warning so much as trying to acknowledge a point of view that can see past certain parameters.
Yeah, I can see it as that. I feel like he was trying to give a warning, but I don't feel as though it was strong enough or that folks didn't already have an idea of what a civil war would look like. Because when I think about, you know, the far right in the United States, the things that they are preparing for in terms of like training, they know fully well what it would look like. In fact, this, you know, some of the scenes in the movie are exactly what played out in New Orleans post Hurricane Katrina. So it doesn't seem as a warning, more so, I guess, a warning for folks who were not, I guess, politically aware of the violence that has taken place in countries or the extreme direction that violence can go.
Yeah, I think that makes, I think a lot of the, I hadn't considered the Hurricane Katrina kind of, you know, when things were, I guess you could say, somewhat lawless and things were not being attended to the way they should have been by George W. Bush, right? He was president, yeah, at the time. And so, yeah, I also don't know that it was necessarily a warning. I think it was almost like his vision. And I think, as you said, Martin, like he did say, I read the same things, that it wasn't meant to necessarily be the U.S. specifically. It could have been any kind of civil war. But I think when I watch it, and maybe it just landed this way because he chose the U.S., it felt very much like it couldn't have been many other places. Like maybe I could see England in some way, potentially, or maybe somewhere within the like Western Europe, but it felt very driven to this American divide that's already kind of poking its head with these far right groups and, you know, like in the West Coast and then in the South, I mean, all over these militia type groups. And also the, I also saw something where he said that, you know, he didn't really consider the whole like weapons thing, like, you know, people are hoarding guns, because he said like, oh, anywhere, anyone could get guns. And I don't know that I agree with that. I think that it is a thing that a lot of the far right kind of militias are doing, is they are hoarding guns and these kind of resources. They're like a whole prepper like industry out there, people who are like preparing for like a thing like this. So I don't know. Yeah. So that wasn't really, that's kind of like how I saw it. But I guess the other thing, like the top, like when I walked out of the movie, I was like furiously writing like little notes on my phone to like not forget things and like try and get quotes down or lines. And, but one of the first things I wrote down, this maybe isn't the best place to start. I guess we're not starting, but something that I thought of is that the movie, for anyone who doesn't know, essentially is kind of like a war movie. Obviously the word war is in it, but kind of like following along several photojournalists as they kind of travel across the country to Washington, D.C., where the president, who is now in his third term and, you know, obviously being looked at as this kind of fascistic president who wants to get rid of the FBI and is bombing his own citizens. And then there are several other groups that have created themselves. There's the Western Forces of Texas and California, the New People's Army of sort of the mid, the Pacific Northwest area, and some of those states up there. And the thing that I wondered, and maybe this is one of the reasons why I had a problem with the movie, is you're following journalists and you don't really get much information. And maybe that was the plan. Like, you don't get a lot of information from the journalistic perspective, which I think he's trying to tell you that it's important to have journalists to give us this presentation that we can then look at and make our own conclusions from. But
no, I actually completely agree with that. I think my biggest critique of the movie is that none of these characters feel like real people. They don't seem fully realized. They at no point do any of them, you know, say like, why is this happening? Or isn't this fucking crazy that this is happening? You know, like they seem so, it's weird to say the term at peace, but they seem just like, unbothered by it. And so many characters in the film seem unbothered by it. Which is kind of the one problem I had. And if you can, I feel like you can get away with that if you're gonna take it to maybe a slightly comedic place. Like I recently, for the first time, watched this movie. But I was thinking a lot about Full Metal Jacket while watching this film and the sort of like dichotomy that those two could play against each other. But in that film, you know, they're as dark and horrifying as it is, there are all these well-placed comedic devices every now and then. And I feel like if he had maybe sprinkled some of that in here to kind of break up the tension, because the tension in this film never breaks. It's going 100% of the time and you feel it. And it's a very serious movie. And if you know, if you see something like, you know, a guy with a helmet that says, "Ain't war hell," or, you know, something like that, it feels, that would feel to me more like a fully realized world.
Yeah, I will add, I felt like, I agree that there wasn't enough of a comedic relief, especially because the tension was, you could cut it with a knife. I will say one of the scenes when they're watching the shootout in the background, I felt like they were smoking a J. And that was the only moment that felt as if they could be real people having to process what they're seeing. In the scene, Sammy and Kirsten Dunst's character, forgot her
Lee,
name,
I think.
But they're sitting on the couch, and Joel is saying how, you know, he gets hard watching the stuff in the background. And that was like the only moment that I felt as if they got some kind of emotion out of it, maybe not joy or anger, but they were still recognizing. But I do agree with you, Martin, that for the most part, they felt so detached from everything and I don't want to say dehumanized, but maybe like de-social from the aspect of it affecting them.
And it seemed like the way they portrayed Kirsten Dunst's character, Lee, was, you know, she's been in all these war situations. It's somehow like she's, I think they like were going for the fact that like she's so desensitized to this, like that none of this even like is real to her, you know. Like which I don't think is like a very good way to play it. I don't know. I feel like even if you're a war veteran type of journalist, you still are probably impacted by all the things you see in some way. And it almost felt like you were watching the characters kind of like from above, just kind of go through these different checkpoints along their journey, you know. And you know, they're obviously they dealt with various amounts of loss. Like that's I agree too, Martin, that there was no breaking up of it. It was very serious. It was a little bit too long for me. I feel like there were stretches where they could have put something else in there, you know, like funny or just, I don't know. It just, there was lots of aspects of it too. And, you know, we can certainly kind of go through some of the plot. And I think some of that is maybe worth doing just as a, maybe for people who haven't seen it, obviously we'll leave the spoilers till later. But part of one of the opening scenes, and I'm curious both maybe what you think and how you would view this, is we've already, at the beginning of the movie, you don't know who the sides are. There's just various groups, and it seems like there's just a scene in New York City. There's a bunch of, you know, violence between police, and they're trying to get their food rations and various things. And then we see someone with an American flag who comes in and sets off, you know, a suicide bomb. You don't ever really learn what group she's from. It's all, again, very much no information kind of thing, which kind of, I don't know, maybe annoyed me a little bit. And I wondered, as you're like watching this part of the movie, is what do you think, I'm trying to think how to phrase this, like what did you think that like the what is like the goal of these? I don't know. I guess you could call it a terrorist attack or whatever it is. Like it's, I just didn't have any way there. I feel like there's no frame of reference early on. And then immediately you kind of get them at the hotel talking about their, you know, their plan to go to DC, and you don't really ever get any information about the political motives of them. Like, even though they're journalists and they have to remain unbiased, as kind of Garland wanted to keep them, they still could offer some kind of information or opinion, or, you know, they just were like so stoic about everything. I don't know. That's not really a question.
Yeah, I almost feel like maybe he was going for this idea of how would it actually feel to be dropped into a conflict with no kind of frame of reference or no real touch point to base, like, why are these people here and why are they attacking these other people? I mean, if when I think about probably what journalists have to do, especially these kind of journalists in this film, you know, they're given a certain probably set of information about where they need to go and what they need to accomplish. But beyond that, it almost seems like, you know, they're just on the sidelines trying to observe, you know, what's happening. I don't know if he necessarily achieved that with the, I actually kind of had problems with the opening scene too, because it almost feels like you walked in the middle of the movie. You know, like, yes. It doesn't even really feel like the beginning of a film, which, I mean, could be, again, intentional on his part.
Yeah, to be honest, I wasn't really a fan of that scene because it just left me questioning, like, the motive, but also how is that related to the plot? Because, yes, it is, you know, about civil war and violence and everything, but no explanation. It's just this random woman engaging in this act, and nothing else is talked about, like, we don't hear any, maybe, you know, brushing of news that while they're on the route to DC about what happened, you know, who is she with? Nothing was involved. And it just felt like they're journalists, but they're not even discussing what journalists are talking about around them.
Yeah. One of the plot devices I like in movies like this that I think they could have used more was like more radio or TVs in the background to give kind of like a background exposition into it. I can't think of like a, I mean, this, it's this is a really common tactic in, like, I've watched a bunch of zombie movies not that long ago, and I feel like they often will use that. Like, I think of Night of the Living Dead, especially, like, they're glued to the radio to learn about information, and this, because they're like the journalists, maybe it's like, well, they would be the ones disseminating the information. They're not going to do that. And I would have loved to have gotten any information through that way, or opening with more, I don't know, like TV, just like a cut to a TV on the screen, like the full screen, just giving us like a little bit of a news report or something. And I mean, maybe the idea is like that it is confusion and you're not supposed to know what's going on in a civil war. I mean, but it's 2024, you know, we have phones in our pockets, internet, we can live stream everything. And so I don't know. It was a little bit weird.
You're kind of touching on something that I think is like a critical error of the movie, which is that we're following photojournalists. I mean, that's not really exactly relevant in our time, much less a few years from now or 10 years from now. You know, if this were accurate, everyone would be shooting video. You know, everyone, we would constantly see screens everywhere and phones everywhere. And for it's almost kind of an old-fashioned kind of choice for him to make them specifically photojournalists. And I don't really know why he made that choice, because he hasn't really talked about that aspect of it. But
I really like that point you just made, because I think about, you know, TikTok. But if TikTok is banned, there's still other platforms people will use. And thinking about the different scenes in the movie, I can't imagine people not having their phone showing what's happening, live streaming it to whoever's near, or just recording or FaceTiming someone. So the lack of phones by other people was just odd and felt, yeah, like dated, as if this could have happened maybe 10 years ago, but in our future now or future ahead of us, phones are absolutely going to be like used to just show what's happening.
And I don't know if either of you seen, like, covered this movie a few months ago. It's an Oliver Stone movie called Salvador. No, it's basically covering a photojournalist in El Salvador in 1980 during their civil war. A similar kind of thing, but in another country in a whole different, completely different scenario. But that makes sense. It came out in 1986. They're trying to get like the shot, you know, like the big shot of what will be on the front page of the, you know, the paper around the world. And like, that's the shot that everyone will be, like the iconic shot. And it doesn't make sense, like you're saying, CJ, like, do you need an iconic shot? Like, where are they? There's like newspapers right. still? Like,
yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Where is this photo going to be viewed?
And if still newspapers, it certainly seems like no one's reading them, you know, because they're going from town mm-hmm. to town and there's all these people who pretend that the war's not going on. I thought about the scene in Nope when the guy, the TMZ guy is trying to get the perfect shot of the alien, you know. That's what it would be like. It would be a lot of those guys riding around.
Yeah, instead it's like these really mainstream journalists, essentially. I don't think they ever say what they are, but you assume like CNN, New York Times.
I think the main two are supposed to be from Reuters.
Oh, Reuters, that's right. They do say that, yeah. I remember that now. Okay,
so. And then the older guy is from the New York Times, I think. That's how it was.
See, they could have used his character in a better way, too. I mean, I like that actor, and I think he played like an interesting role in the movie. But being that he seems like he wasn't a photojournalist, he's actually, you know, a writer, why not use that as some like level of strength in the scenes? And, you know, I think, obviously, they go with a larger group of people, and like slowly people are going to get killed along the way. And that was kind of, you know, the main plot of the movie, as the war is hell or whatever. And so people are dying on the way. But maybe to talk a little bit about some of the political aspect of it that is also, to me, a bit confused, is I briefly mentioned kind of how the war broke, or the different kind of factions. The loyalist states are essentially the Northeast and some of the Midwest, and that's kind of the states that are loyal to the president, played by Nick Offerman. And then you have the Western forces, again, California, Texas. You have this Florida alliance in the South, and then this New People's Army. And you primarily get a lot of stuff happening through the Western forces and the New People's Army. And I don't know, I wondered if, like, what you make of the... because I've read some things about this, of, for one, California and Texas as like this alliance is never explained. And one of his interviews, he's like, of course it makes sense that they would be together. And I'm wondering what you think about that. And just like, do these like factions of this civil war even make sense? And like, or like, does it matter? I don't know.
I don't know that it matters, because I think ultimately what he's attempting to point out is how easily this could just happen. And how quickly and how irrationally and nonsensically it could happen. I think in our country in this day and age, I don't see any way that California and Texas band together to secede from the U.S. But I think the point he's trying to prove is that, you know, regardless of how different we may seem, we're actually much more alike than we care to admit. And we have much more in common than we may think we do. So I don't know if he even... It almost seems like he didn't really even put that much thought into it, as far as like the divisions, you know what I mean? Like, he was probably just like, yeah, this sounds crazy. This could happen. You know, and I think that does work for the film. I think if he were presenting this film with a very specific political stance, then that wouldn't work at all. But because he's trying to present it from this objective point of view, it does make sense for the, you know, the geography of the film.
Yeah, I will say that. Yeah, I don't think it matters. Although I do think it makes sense that California and Texas would be together, just because they both have like a long history of their own separate like secessionist movements. And so I'm not sure if he's aware of that and was trying to play on those aspects. But it did just feel odd, just considering our current climate regarding those two states. And I wish he explained why, like, do something to explain why they were together. Like, what is their shared interest that outside of wanting to just remove the president that they are aligning with? And I think that really would have helped complete the plot for me, at least.
Well, this is the theory I had. I don't know if this makes sense to either of you, is the why they would be together again. This is just purely speculation. Is one, I think you've mentioned, CJ, is like them having this, you know, history of wanting to secede from the United States in some way. But they both are like very, very large states. I think the two largest states in terms of population and probably like GDP, maybe outside of New York for the maybe. And the reason I bring that up is I wonder if they, oh, sorry, that's not the part I want to, my prediction is, I think that people think of California as this very liberal state, which it is. You know, there's very large cities, LA, San Francisco, that are very liberal. But I think as like a state, I think it's also a very conservative state outside of those major cities. And Texas, outside of like Austin and a few others, is also a very conservative state. So I don't think they have as much, I think they have more in common than I think people would normally think of when they think of California. They think of, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor. It's like this, you know, Hollywood liberal kind of state. But I think it makes a little bit of sense. And also probably from an economic standpoint, the fact that they're so big and they're so wealthy, mm-hmm. is that being together where they could form their own little, I don't know, Texas, California country or something. And they obviously have a lot of military resources given how large their states are, too. So that was my take on it. And I think, I guess it doesn't really matter in the in.
It could sort of make sense geographically, too, if you're talking about like people trying to travel across, mm-hmm. you know, once they hit Texas, that's a big ass state. and same with California, you know, they want to keep that West Coast locked down.
Most of Garland's thing saying is that he was trying to make a political film, had a political message to it, but he wasn't trying like take it to, I guess, the next level as far as looking deeply into like, what do these political things mean? Like, okay, so they've now overthrown, spoiler, at the end of the movie, they overthrow, you know, they kill the Nick Offerman as president, and they presumably are now forming their own government. But you don't obviously get anything beyond that. And I wonder, because it's kind of an apolitical movie in some sense, you don't really get a sense of, you know, like what would come after, like, is these other states that are now taking control, just because they have control, they don't have any control over this whole other group of loyalist states, right? So you're just going to have kind of the same thing. They're going to need to potentially put in a president that's very similar to Nick Offerman to regain order. And, you know, you kind of, the cycle continues. So it just, I would have liked actually to have him put a little more thought into the political narrative of it, because it kind of would give the ending, I think, like what comes next, a little more weight than now, where you just kind of like, well, I guess nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, the journalist didn't really do anything. At the end of the day, I guess they got their like big picture of, you know, of Kirsten Dunst coming through, but like, what was it all for? I don't know.
Yeah, that's it seems like somebody should have asked that question at some point.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely left questions about that, because, okay, so now what's next? They got it. What's next?
Civil War II next summer?
Yeah.
Electric Boogaloo?
I mean, I think this is unfortunately like a lot of movies where there is kind of like a revolutionary kind of plot to them often do this in Hollywood. I mean, it is Hollywood, and I understand there's some constraints maybe on what they're allowed to put into a movie, but it always seems like at the end of some kind of revolutionary type of idea, which is kind of the goal or the feeling of the end, is like they've overthrown like the fascist dictator, and now they're going to install someone who is, you know, not like that. And you don't ever kind of get what's next. You just kind of get the, we should do this, but we don't know why or what, you know, what will come next. And maybe that's just, again, like the constraints of movies in Hollywood, the constraints of what Garland wanted to do, just what could you even do? Like, you could have had some text scroll afterwards with some, like, these are the things that happened. I mean, wait, they did have a few of those, actually, now that I think about it. They did, right? Did they have some text on screen?
No, not that I recall. No,
yeah. Okay, so they didn't. So that's what I think they should have. Something like that.
Well, I think it's possible that he just may not know. Too, you know, I think he probably designed this to be, while it is a story that is about a very massive thing, it's still fairly contained. And we're 100% with this team of journalists the entire time. We never stray from them. So everything we see is from their point of view. By the end of it, they don't know any more than we do. They don't know what's going to happen either. So it's almost this sense of finality that kind of makes sense. But, you know, I also get that of wanting to know, like, well, where do we go from here? Did it solve anything? Did it actually change anything? Who knows?
I think it also allowed him to play with the, you know, the idea of being apolitical, because we don't know the ideologies of the Western forces. And, you know, the ability to opt out of having to make a full stance on who the Western forces are and what's going to happen next. I think it just kind of really played into the whole apolitical idea.
Do you think, like, does it work for you that it was like an apolitical movie? Or, like, do you think that that was like a bit of a cop out? Or maybe that, I mean, I from what he's like, again, from like the things he said about it, it like, it seemed like that's what he was kind of going through for, especially considering it wasn't, could be anywhere. It could be any civil war, any kind of thing. To play devil's advocate, if he does give some political take on it, and then people would say like, oh, well, you're part of the woke agenda trying to do something for this movie, or like, I don't know,
Yeah, I think that's the biggest criticism of the movie, right? That's kind of the thing that most people have really taken umbrage with. It worked for me ultimately, because if I had sat down to this movie and it had started preaching at me one way or the other, I would have been just like immediately pulled out of it and turned off by it. I think it's interesting that he chose to make a movie like this in this way, in this time, because it's almost like one of the only artifacts of kind of quote unquote centrist media that we have as far as like a film or something. You know, like most things like this, and most directors would try to say something. They would try to get across their own personal point of view. And it feels to me like right now a lot of people are angry about that part of it. But I think when we get like maybe years down the line, this film is kind of like reassessed, it'll have this moment of like, actually that maybe was a smart move, because we're able to just like see this conflict from a bird's eye view and just understand how fucking horrific it would be, regardless of what we feel about, you know, who's in power or not.
I will say, I did kind of think it was a cop-out, because if you're going to center journalists, even if there are photojournalists, there is an aspect of like information gathering, and to not have any information or to hear them, you know, at least share what they're seeing on regarding the both sides was just, I get the idea of wanting to be apolitical, but you can still be, you know, apolitical through these journalists by having them show the different sides and let the audience decide if, you know, this was good or this was bad. But I just didn't like how he is centering these journalists and these journalists are not informing us about anything.
Well, there was one scene, I think, where they mention something about how, like, they take these photos and then they let the people, you know, can come to their own conclusions. And it's almost like he took that. It was like the meta-analysis of his own movie, right? Mm-hmm. Like
that's the mission statement of the movie, really.
Yeah. Right.
Is to, you know, especially when you see these freeze frames that Jesse, the younger character, is taking. It's interesting because they're like gorgeously composed, beautifully lit photos of horrible things. And you're like forced to reckon with that in real time.
Maybe we can talk about some of like the specific scenes in the movie that I think are worth discussing. I think maybe you can think of a couple of them, but one being, I think it's maybe there's three in mind that I'm thinking of. So early on, when they're on their journey, they end up going to like a gas station to buy gas, and we see now like the dollar of the U.S. dollar is like crashed, and they end up using Canadian dollars, which I think is not so far off being like a thing that will probably happen. people trying to pay in like what, like cryptocurrency or something. Mm-hmm. But they see some like people who were strung up, potentially looters, like you don't exactly know. And the people who are selling them gas have, you know, essentially are torturing these people. And, you know, they take a photo with the guy, with the people hanging from like a car wash. And it's pretty like pretty gruesome. And you, again, don't really get any, you're kind of left from the journalist perspective is like, oh, we're just going to get something to document that this happened. And then when people watch it, they can decide what it was. But I think you do get a snapshot of what people are currently living through. And they're, I think you said, Zizi, before, this is kind of like the, you know, post-Katrina, where just all hell breaking loose and people just living for themselves. They don't care about one another beyond maybe their close-knit group. And so I don't know what you thought about that scene and if it like makes sense. And I think it is like a somewhat political statement, even if it's not, even if you don't know like the actual politics of the people.
I thought it was interesting because I don't think we get the person's name, but I definitely remember him having like a gold cross necklace. And I thought that was just so interesting for you to have a gold cross necklace, you know, I'm thinking Christianity, and for you to have folks strung up on your car wash and be torturing them. And that was just like, oh, okay. This ideas of, I guess, Christianity don't go as far as when it comes to people being in need, and the aspect of him being able to get back at someone who bullied him in high school was reminding me of, like, you know, vengefulness and when it comes to crisis. But that the cross was just like, okay, that's funny, interesting.
Yeah, the only this scene, our point of view, I think, is really through Kaylee Spaney's character.
Yeah.
Because this is like her first real exposure to this stuff. She's been like a freelancer and she's just been picked up by them, but she's never seen anything like this. And obviously Lee reacts to it as if it's, you know, paint drying on a wall. But she is very, very viscerally affected by it. And the idea of, I'm glad you mentioned that part about him being the high school bully, because I had actually forgotten that. But the thing about Civil War is that it's turning neighbors against neighbors and people who know each other against each other. And that's like mm-hmm. the first real inkling of that you get in the film, of like, oh, this guy, he just hated this dude from high school, and now he's allowed to do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, she is really like the focal point of that scene. And I feel like even throughout the rest of the movie, she's kind of the only one who seems to be truly affected by it, by any of the carnage.
Yeah. So, I mean, just as for anyone who may not know, so Kaylee Spaney plays like, I think her name is Jessie. She's like a young photographer who ends up like kind of getting her way into this journey to Washington, D.C. with Lee and Joel. And so part of it, I think, makes sense. I actually kind of like the device of having this like young photographer. I mean, maybe it could have been a different kind of journalist, but kind of it's almost like the younger generation now seeing like what actually is happening in our country. Like, I think that scene is like pretty a good depiction of people who are like maybe sheltered, like they don't really kind of understand what's happening across the country, what people's ideologies are, where these kind of things go. And so through her eyes, you see like, oh shit, people are mm-hmm. doing some fucked up stuff. And, you know, I guess I'm going to have to get used to this, because the other ones already, they've been all over the world. They know what yeah. it is. And I think her character is, I think that there are a lot of great performers. Kirsten Dunst is also quite good, but I think the young photojournalist, gives the movie a bit of, like life to it. I don't know. That's not really the
case. Yeah, she's kind of the heartbeat for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even if she was aware of everything that was going on, it was likely just through screens or through what she heard on the TV, you know.
After that was kind of one of the things that I thought would kind of caught my eye, and it's kind of very glossed over, is that they end up going to like a refugee camp, essentially, where, you know, I don't know if it's outside of Charlottesville. I don't remember exactly where they are. But they're basically in this group of, you know, people who are now fleeing from their homes. They might have been bombed by the president. As we know, he's been just, you know, bombing people in the country. And It's you see it through the eyes of a refugee camp. And normally when you see a movie like this, you think of like a refugee camp in like across the world where like you don't, you know the people. It's just kind of a place far off. But like seeing this refugee camp in America, I think is a pretty, I wish they had done more to show it than just kind of use it as this brief little thing where she kind of learns how to, she's like looking through her photos and like a sweet little thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I almost feel like there's a version of this movie that's like 20 minutes longer that makes a lot more sense, you know, and maybe that makes it way too long. It's already a pretty long movie, but some of those scenes, especially that scene, does feel kind of cut short. You definitely, there could be, you know, even without him having to necessarily explain to us what's happening and why it's happening, there could be some more kind of space given to a lot of these sequences that we see to give us a more full picture of the world that he's putting together.
Yeah, like even having the journalists speak with the folks in the camps would have been interesting to add, I guess, add to the plot and add to the story of conflict, because it's not necessarily they're going to be on a certain side, but just being impacted by the violence is something that would have added to what he's already trying to present.
Probably the scene that I think I saw the most being talked about, I think it's probably the most powerful, or I don't know how I would describe it, is when they end up coming across like another person that they know in another car, and then they, you know, they're drag racing kind of down the road, jumping between cars, and, you know, kind of like the one part where they're being like a little silly. Like maybe that's mm-hmm. the one time where there is a little bit of not seriousness,
blowing off some steam,
and it happens to be like right before like one of the more, I guess, messed up scenes where you have what is it, Jesse Plemons, mm-hmm. You know, as like this ultra nationalist type of militant, you don't exactly know, and they're essentially dumping bodies into a mass grave. It's unclear whose side and who's who, but they start questioning like the nationality of each of the people who are in the group, and ends up, you know, shooting several of them. And it's like a pretty, I don't know. I feel like this scene is more like a political statement than any other parts of the movie, you know, specifically like what is his character's name? I guess we don't know, do we?
No, I don't think he's ever named.
Okay. So Jesse Plemons, you learn that he has a comment about like them being from like something being from China, and, you know, disparaging other countries, and like, oh, you have to be from like the good part of the country, like a loyalist. And I guess presumably he's on the side of, you know, the current president, Nick Offerman. But I don't know the scene, like being sort of in the middle of the movie, like there's still, again, no like break in any of these, mm-hmm. like from one scene to the next, it's very heavy, and like this, mm-hmm. like really weighs on you in the middle of the movie, and weighs on all the people in that survive. I guess there's only three of them survive, or four.
Yeah, the one time anyone seems to have any real like sense of the danger that's around them is in this scene when Stephen McKinley Henderson says, "Do not go down there." Like he's the only one who's telling them to just stay out of this, because he knows exactly how it's going to go. They probably all know exactly how it's going to go, but they have to help their friends. They have to try and do something. It is the most powerful scene in the movie. He steals the whole thing just in that one, in the like the 5 minutes of screen time that he has. His performance seems so like fully embodied. Like you can really picture that kind of guy, you know. And you're right though, in that it does seem kind of the most heavy-handed in a way, because of just how this guy is interacting with immigrants, and how you know that they're not getting out alive.
Yeah. And thinking about just the tension of the scene prior where they're like going through the cars, that though, at no point before that scene, after that scene, was there any relief? Because after that, you know, we end up finding out what happens to him. And it's like moment after moment after moment after moment, it's just, the tension keeps building, and there's just so much despair, and there's no relief whatsoever. And so like knowing that they had to go into this after they were just having this moment on high with their racing, it was just like another like punch to your chest about, oh, they're not done. There's more despair coming.
Yeah. I was thinking now is the only other moment where I think they have a little bit of relief is when they go into the small town that's like pretending that there's nothing happening, which I think is also, it's funny. As I like talk through each of the scenes, I feel like a lot of them do have like some kind of political perspective, but like as a whole, they don't like somehow like have a cohesive narrative, like the cohesive narrative that he wanted to make, but like maybe not as, like it's almost like each scene kind of like stands on their own as like this little snapshot into what's going on, and we don't really have any perspective. And like they go into the town, like they're trying on dresses or clothing, and it's very much like, oh, like everything is all good. And then they, you know, see like a sniper on the roof, and they're just kind of like pretending things are all right. I think I could see like this being like exactly how this would be, right? You have these towns that are just like,
yeah, what would we do? You know? Yeah.
And I thought it was actually probably one of the most realistic scenes of the movie, especially in like the environment or background in the United States. Because think about the like makeshift refugee camp that was primarily, you know, they looked to be like predominantly like mixed, diverse, like racially mixed, diverse crowd. And then you see the town they're going into, which is like a lily white town, and that ability to opt out of the violence while we see you know, racially marginalized folks not have that ability where they're having to flee. And I thought that was very, very like on the nose in terms of America's like demographic inequalities and politics.
Yeah. It reminded me of a movie that I'm blanking on, The Harder They Fall. I don't know if any of you have seen that.
Oh, yeah.
And there's like the scene in that movie where they go to like the white town, where it's literally like the town is like colored white and the people are all white. And it feels like the same kind of thing where you go into this town and like you're like a outsider if you're not one of these people. And like the people in that civil war, the refugee camp, if they were to show up here, they would not be, they're not welcome, you know, in the place like this. They probably also wouldn't have been welcome, obviously, with the Jesse Plemons character, and wouldn't have been welcome with that car wash scene. It's like you do get snapshots that there is this very like racially charged disparity between groups, but it's only kind of, I guess I'm like sort of like talking myself into saying like, I guess it kind of makes sense in the sense that they're just kind of on this drive and all they get to see are little snippets. And that's kind of you as the viewer only getting that snippet, but it's unsatisfying to me.
Yeah. They're snapshots of all the extreme possible situations. And I think that sort of falls hand in hand with the journalism aspect of it, because the journalists are trying to get the best story, the best shots, the most intense, most extreme things they can, right, to show people what's really the magnitude of this thing that's happening. So it's like, it does progress, getting worse and worse throughout the film as they are ultimately leading up to, you know, what's going to be the final shot that they're trying to get.
Yeah, I guess after that part, when they end up, you know, the sort of like the last, I guess the last third of the movie, or maybe a little bit less than that, is they arriving at the military camp in Charlottesville, and they are like angry about, you know, what's going on. I think that Lee, like, is that when Lee kind of is like getting drunk, and he's like they're grieving over the fact that they just witnessed something pretty horrific in, you know, that they're even, normally when they're probably in a war scenario abroad, like they may not know the people personally, and this is like a personal journey. And maybe that's part of it too, that you're meant to think like, if there was a civil war, most likely you would probably lose someone like that, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know, in like absolutely another town, or like in your own town, or someone. Yeah. So I guess it does try and do that. But I guess the, like thinking of the last, I guess, 30 minutes where it's essentially the siege on the White House, which is really like big time war scene, explosions, bullets, and, you know, high.
It's incredible filmmaking.
It is. Like the last part is pretty, pretty insane. But I wondered if, do you think that they're trying to, this is maybe sort of like a last question. Not, this could be at the end, but I'm thinking of this. Like, are they trying to like humanize is using the journalists in this way like meant to like humanize war? Is that like, do you think what he was going for?
I almost feel like he's trying to just kind of draw on a sort of shared humanity. One thing that really stuck out to me during, especially during this scene, but during a lot of scenes, is that all of the, everywhere they go, where they encounter a firefight, they are protected by the soldiers who they're running with. And it is that way in every scene. So you don't know if they're specifically on one side or another, or if they're on both sides. The only time they aren't protected is when they encounter Jesse Plemons' character and you know, those guys. But there does seem to be this general respect for the press and an idea that they are impartial and they are merely here to observe. It's our job to have the war, have the firefight. But they are, you know, if they can hang with us, then they can hang. But if not, then they better stay the fuck out of the way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, I mean, I did like the, as far as, like you said, like cinema, cinematically, like it. the last like 20, 30 minutes of all the, like, the fights.
Oh man, the gunshots in this movie are like, after Heat, they are the best gunshots in a movie I've ever heard. Like, they're unreal. It like, my chest was like pounding during this sequence.
I guess as, like, we get to the end of the movie, what was that question I was going to mention? Is can't find my question or note of it, but I guess, like, we kind of already talked about what we make of the ending. Like, there isn't really, like, we don't get the satisfying idea of, like, what will come next, but, like, is it, like, a reasonable ending? Like, they essentially, rather than, like, capturing the president, I think that he asks him for a quote and he says, please don't kill me. And then they just, like, he's like, yep, that'll do. And then he just shoots him in the head and that's the end of it. And I think it's probably much more realistic that that would be what would happen, as opposed to, like, capturing him and, like, what are you going to question him for? Like, what's he going to tell you? Right. So it's just like the horrors of war. And it's kind of like this facelessness too, where you just have these people who are now leaders of a militia as part of a alliance between states in a civil war, and they're just breaking the White House and they're just mowing people down.
I love the tension of the scene right before they get into the Oval Office when they encounter the press secretary, and she's sort of saying, like, okay, the president is ready to agree to terms. And these guys are like, nope, there are no terms. We're coming in there, we're taking him, and you're not going to do anything about it. There's no chance. And it's just a group of like four or five soldiers too, you know, like, who knows where they came from, who knows who's giving them orders or if they're even taking orders. Honestly, the ambiguity of it, especially in that final sequence, kind of adds to the horror of it for me. You know, all these people are just helpless to defend themselves or even talk their way out of it.
I thought the scene with the Secret Service was, obviously, the Secret Service job is to protect the president, but not seeing the president engage in any type of action, or just for him to be positioned as being this fascist, you know, dictator, but not have any, you know, strength himself, was, I thought, some, you know, semblance of a comedic relief, just because if someone has this, I guess, prop of being so authoritarian and then cower immediately, which is okay, that checks out. I guess
behind the strength of, like, you know, it's, you can easy to be strong when you have like a military and all these things behind you, and then once those are gone, you're just a sad man in a room with like nothing will stop you. I guess anyone is vulnerable, right? Like, you could be when I think about the end scene, I like also get this like very little, I know, like, you think of Civil War, you think of like the American Civil War. I almost get this like very light little vibe of like the president being kind of like the Southern, you know, the South, like, now just conceding and losing to this Western force. And, but like people like the Jesse Plemons character are still out there. Like, they're not gone. Like,
it's not going to stop.
Right. Like, they're still going to go around and probably massacre people that aren't, you know, deemed American in, you know, quotation marks for him, or foreigners, or, people of color, whoever they like deem as like not, you know, part of their white ethno state or whatever. So yeah, it's like, that's why like nothing is really solved. And I guess maybe that's kind of like Eric Alex Garland's point. Like, you know, the, you can have this civil war, but I don't know.
Any way it goes is going to be terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that definitely sums up how he's trying to message it as too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Were there any,
I was just going to say, it's been fascinating watching him do press for this movie, because he so clearly has like an ideology and knows what he's trying to say with the film, but he's also a guy who just like clearly hates doing interviews. And you can just tell like how annoyed he is at having to say these things over and over again. And I just think it's interesting that the film has been like really polarizing, especially on the internet, but it did pretty well at the box office. Like everybody wanted to go see this thing, and or at least a lot of people did. And it's kind of like, I don't know, there's an interesting juxtaposition of like a lot of people kind of maybe spitefully watching the movie, and then other people very invested in it or whatever. And it was really hard to stay away from the discourse around this before I saw it, which is like, that's just another problem with being on the internet, of having things ruined for you before you can take part in them. But
yeah, actually, we were talking before how like it doesn't make sense that there wouldn't be, you know, people live streaming or taking videos. One of the interviews that I saw with him, he talks about how like that politics in general have become very polarizing. He has said something about how people, like, there really is really good journalism out there, but they're not like listening to those journalists. And he actually at one point like blames social media for a lot of this like political divide amongst people. And I get the sense that he like hates social media with like a passion. And so like that was his like nod to be like, I'm not going to include any of that shit in this movie. It's just going to be people taking photos with film. like screw you. So
yeah,
it seems to be that could be the only reason why you would do that, is because he's like, fuck off.
Yeah, just didn't want to deal with having to write that in.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, clearly a guy, if you consider the rest of his filmography, clearly a guy who has a lot of worries and a lot of fears and anxieties about the way the world is going, especially in the last 10 years.
Yeah, a lot of opinions. I kind of felt as though he was like, was it throwing rocks and hiding his hands in terms of his movie? Like, you can make this grand opinion, grand gesture, but when it comes time for people to be critical on what you're saying, he kind of like hides his hands from actually facing, you know, criticism regarding his idea of being apolitical, or trying to hide this idea that he's not sharing his political ideology with this film.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's a great point.
Yeah. I think I agree with that. Like a person who's been on this podcast a few times, and his in his letterbox review, I'm not going to read it like word for word, but there was something he said at the end of it that I think is a pretty interesting observation of that. I'm wondering, I guess this could be like maybe, you know, the last thought, and if you have any last thoughts, but what do you think of this? He said basically that, you know, everyone wants this to have like meaning and whatever it is. And I think him making it kind of apolitical is basically saying, like, anyone who's looking for some level of catharsis living through like the collapse of, you know, America, Western, you know, hegemony, whatever term you want to use, it's just kind of like a fuck you to that, being like, we're not going to give you like the feeling of a sigh. We're just going to give you this kind of apolitical thing, and then you do what you want.
And also just like proposing this idea that maybe we like expect too much or ask too much of the of like a lot of the media we consume to confirm our own biases. You know, things have become so polarized and radicalized, and people are buried in their own echo chambers very often. And for me, it was just very refreshing to like sit down to something like this and have it not confirm nor deny, you know, anything that I might personally believe. You know, I just on the face of it, I enjoyed it as just a really strong filmmaking perspective, because I think this is like, as far as technical aspects, I think this is probably his best film, perhaps after Ex Machina. But yeah, it's like, it's a weird thing to say that you enjoyed watching this in a theater because of the subject matter. But I did. I had a great time because it was propulsive and intense, and it held my attention every moment. So,
yeah, the performance of everyone was just amazing. And just watching Jesse's character in particular grow from in the span of 2 hours, although I hated the ending and what happened, it was just, I was just captured by everything.
The movie is very well made. I think you said at the beginning, Mark, like maybe in 5 or 10 years, people might look back on it as maybe better than, you know, some people view it now because it's kind of mixed reviews. And I feel like maybe after discussing it, I like have a slightly more appreciation for it. I think it did have a lot of problems thematically, and just kind of like it wouldn't have been too long if it wasn't so serious the whole time. Like I could have had 20 more minutes of the movie if they like broke it up in a more way where you're not like constantly like, what's gonna happen, like Jesus, can you just stop for a second. Like even in the scene in like the clothing store, like it's still like they're like have a lot of tension because of the town they're in. So I don't know, did you have any, either of you have any like last thoughts about it? That
I hope it's not in the last movie he directs, like it's supposedly the story. But yeah, I really appreciate the technical craft of it, and I think it ultimately does have more to say than maybe it lets on. But you know, that could just be recency bias. You know, it's right now, it's, I think I put it at maybe number 4 in his works. But yeah, I and this is why I like doing this kind of thing too, because we're all bringing up different things and exposing each other to different ideas, and it's more rich now, you know, to think about all these different things in regards to the film.
My last few thoughts are just, as a British man, I think he was kind of on the nose about the kind of beliefs and systems and the underbelly of the United States, and portraying that thing about Jesse Plemons' character and the town. But that's kind of all I really give him for that. I think he could have done more. I think this idea of trying to hide your politics is just, it's not realistic.
I think he hit it, but then he also like let it go in certain ways, like throughout the movie. Like there is these peaks or like moments where you get something. But I guess before we go, I know I mentioned your podcast, Martin, before. Do you want to tell people, I guess, about it or where they can listen?
Presumably, yeah, it's called Film Splaining with Martin Strange, and it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Amazon Music. Basically, each week I break down either a subject or a film or a genre or a group of movies that I'm interested in, and try and figure out why I like them and what makes them work. And I talk a lot about older movies and genre movies. We released an episode last week on Japanese horror films, and I kind of tried to trace the history of that movement. This week, one that just dropped today, actually, that will be out by the time you listen to this, is all about certain comic book adaptations that are not like superhero movies, because I also love comics and I'm really into those kinds of adapting one medium to another. New episodes every Friday.
And I'll put a link down in the thing. But like you said, that will be out when you listen to this, presumably. And I guess CJ can find you on only TikTok?
No, I'm on TikTok and I'm on Substack now. Okay. I'm on Substack at Radio Free Nation.
Awesome. Well, I'll also put a link to that in the bottom, and wherever you're listening, presumably right now, you can just hit subscribe and listen to episodes on a weekly basis on movies. But you've been listening to Left of the Projector, and thank you both, CJ and Barton, for coming on. It's been great.
Thank you, Evan. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, we will catch you all next time.